good evening, everyone. Coaching call number three. Thanks for dialing in across the country, coast to coast, and on the web. I know we have a full lineup again tonight. Thanks for taking time out of your busy evenings to spend some time with us. So, as always, make sure you have yourself a pen and paper because we are going to get started. We are going to cover a lot of information tonight. So, format's going to be I'm going to introduce my guest host with me tonight very shortly. Then I'm going to do a very quick presentation, and Patrick's going to jump in with a tremendous amount of insight. Then, as always, we're going to open it up to some Q&A at the end for the ones that have submitted and also for those of you who are online. So our intention for tonight, I wrote this presentation, the title I wanted to give it was The Stuff I Wish I Knew When I Got Started, because this entire list of information that I'm going to share with you around getting started and the business side of real estate is information I wish somebody had pulled me aside early on in the game and shared it with me. We're really going to try and get some good habits, you know, separate the good habits from the bad habits, and when's the best time to get a good habit in place is right from the beginning. And what we're also planning to do is to try and avoid having that office nightmare, keeping you a little bit organized so you can have a little bit of peace in the family, a little bit of peace in the office, how you can fit this incredible real estate business in your personal life. And no one better to be able to help walk us through a lot of the insights into how to fit real estate into a busy life is probably one of the most busiest people I know. Mr. Patrick Francley owns many businesses, and he's going to share a little bit of his story. He runs, operates some real estate service businesses. He owns retail stores. He's been an entrepreneur all his life, and he is an expert when it comes to real estate and also to business. So, Patrick, I'm very honored to have you on the phone tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing terrific, Russell. I'm excited about being on the call. I think it's a great topic, and I'm just glad to be on the call and be able to participate.
Now, I know some of the RAIN members that are on this call have maybe seen you at the meeting. You've seen you hosting, and you facilitate a wonderful meeting. But maybe some people don't know a little bit about your backstory and what you call your entrepreneur accident. Maybe if you can give people a little bit of a backstory and what you've done to date, how you've come to this point, and maybe even share your real estate experience up to this point.
Wow. You know,
and do that all in 37 seconds.
We'll give you the cold notes version. You know, I'm getting a little gray, so my story's getting a bit old, and there's lots of ground to cover. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, back in my entrepreneurial accident happened after being part of, I think the first recession that I'd ever been part of was, you know, back in the 80s when the National Energy Program was introduced by the then government. And then at the end of the day, I was in the oil and gas industry. I had done very, very well with a corporate background for a young guy. But, you know, I lost my job during that downturn. And just through a series of events and how things unfold, and the next thing you know, I'm the owner of a couple of retail stores in Edmonton called Professional Skate Service, Pro Skate. I still have them. I've had them since 1984. And I refer to it as my entrepreneurial accident because it was in the skating industry. It was in retail. It was, you know, I don't skate. I don't really play hockey, and I'd never been in retail. So it definitely was an entrepreneurial accident. Having said all of that, the business has done me, you know, very, very well over the years. I haven't been involved in a day-to-day part of it for, I think, 7 or 8 years now. You know, it pays me every month, and that's part of – and the reason I bring that is not to, you know, talk so much about the fact that the business pays me, but it's an asset that I built, and I built the asset of a business that pays me. And back in about 1999, my wife Stephanie and I started to recognize that, you know, really we don't have a retirement plan per se. The businesses do well, but how do we really create long-term wealth and add depth to our financial kind of integrity, or the financial stability and sustainability, you know, as we got older and went forward. And real estate had never been in my lexicon of understanding. But my friends, the guys that I recognize as successful, the people that I looked up to, all in spite of the fact that they had great businesses, they all had investment portfolios. And so we had a little bit of money, and I started investing in real estate, and I came across the Real Estate Investment Network. I attended an ACRE workshop, and Stephanie and I joined RAIN in October of 2001, to be exact, Russell.
Yeah.
And we started buying real estate. And
if you don't mind sharing, what's your portfolio running at about now?
That's, of course, as you know, it's sometimes a tough question. I can tell you that between, because I've got partners involved and et cetera, but with my partners and myself, we're about 125 doors.
Okay.
And that's single family, a little bit of multifamily, some commercial building, and lots of, fourplexes and up-down duplexes, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And you do all of those properties while also being the president of the Real Estate Investment Network, plus
mm-hmm.
Having, taken time to go with your wife to New York City, which you just got back from.
Oh, boy, you got to work hard to pay for that trip, I'll tell you that much right now.
So really, if you really think about that, this fantastic story that you talked about, and it really comes down to you've used systems. What a wonderful story you shared with. You owned a business of professional skate services.
Yeah.
You've never skated. You didn't play hockey, and it wasn't a passion of your life, but you really, and now that business pays you every month. And how were you able to do that?
Well, that's because, to be honest with you, first off, back during the recession, it was truly survival. I needed to do something, and this was a way that I could start to generate income. But more importantly, in all of this, I was just passionate about business and growing a business and building an asset called business, which I understood. And that was part of, the blessing in disguise of having my corporate background was that I was kind of, I don't want to say mentor, but, the people that I reported to, I learned a lot from. And I'm very coachable to this day. I'm still very, very coachable. I take lessons. I get common sense stuff. And once I understand it, I just embrace it and I take action with it. That's just part of how I'm hardwired. At the end of the day, although I wasn't hockey and figure skating and skates weren't my thing, business was. And understanding how to build that business. And even along that line, Russell, I was blessed, those milestone moments in life I had happened to me when a good friend of mine walked in my office when I was at the store one day, and he saw that I was all stressed, and he said, Patrick, you really need a vacation. And I looked at him, begrudgingly, and I said, when
What's
I have
that?
Your money and your time, I'll take a vacation, which was just a classic thing for any entrepreneurial that's buried to say. But anyways, he just looked at me and very compassionately, just said, he says, when you start working on your business instead of working in your business, you will, in fact, one day have the money and the time. And although that phrase gets used often, it hit me right between the eyes, and that was many years ago, and I just went, okay, I've got to change what I'm doing. And that's really was one of those turning points for me, and so then I really just embraced that aspect of the business, and I started applying it to whatever I did.
Yeah.
I didn't have to be the expert in everything. I just got really great at surrounding myself with great people. Creating relationship with them, creating vision, supporting them to succeed in what they wanted to do. And that's how it unfolded for me.
I think that's brilliant. And one of the things you said earlier, and I think one of the reasons why you're such a good coach, is that you said that you're very coachable. And you will find that people that are good coaches are very coachable along the process as well.
Yeah, and to that end, I don't profess, and I'm not even interested in being the smartest guy in the room. I don't have to know it all. I don't try and know it all. My job is to really to surround myself with the right people. And, because tonight's topic is, getting started in real estate, I think that was one of the things that I figured out early when I looked at some of the RAIN members, once again, who I looked at and went, man, they seem to have it figured out. What are they doing? And when I talk to them and or when I observe them, Russell, you know, you're no different. I mean, because at the end of the day, you have a really nice portfolio in Alberta and you live right here in the lower mainland of British Columbia as well. And, you know, you too figured out quickly is that putting a great team of people together and engaging with them and respecting and creating relationship with them is how we were able to do it and how I was able to do it.
Yeah, I look at each time I go to a RAIN meeting each month, I think I learn more than the RAIN than I teach. Okay. And it's just those connections that you make. It's just wonderful that you can pick up a telephone and call somebody who, you know, has the knowledge that you're looking for. So
that's the truth of it. And you know, something, Russell, you asked a question earlier, I think, which was something along the lines of how did you phrase it? I'm trying to think of now. You know, what did you wish you knew then that you know now, or something along that line? And you know, as an investor starting out, and this is something that I still can reflect back on, and I don't mind sharing it. And that is that I was really frightened. As successful as I had been in business, it still kind of freaked me out. You know, going and putting an offer on a piece of real estate and doing all that, going through that process of buying my first piece of real estate, because I wasn't familiar with it. It was not comfortable in terms of what I knew. And at the end of the day, if I would have known then what I know now, I would have just really, really reached out, asked for more help, not tried to think I had to know how to do it all by myself. During the first couple of 3 months, I wish I would have asked more questions and reached out more. I finally did all that, but it just took me a little bit. Now, in reflection, I spent a little bit more time thinking about it before doing it.
Well, do you find, you know, general statement, but you know, when you look at yourself as an entrepreneur all your life, do you find entrepreneurs sometimes have a little bit of a lone wolf syndrome?
Oh yeah, you're right. It's a bit of a generalization, but we all, you know, I think as entrepreneurs, we think we have to have all the answers and know it all. And but what, you know, and as I've gotten older and wiser, what I've come to realize is that the opposite of that is true. We don't have to know it all, and
You have to know less, but you have to know who to talk to.
It's right. You got to ask questions, and you got to reach out and ask for support.
Absolutely. So, with that thought in mind, why don't we dive in? I've got to prepared a little bit of a checklist, like what I would call the winning checklist, of some things to do when you're getting started in this business of real estate, to separate your real estate and your business, and to make a successful go of it. One of the first things that I would share with people is, wherever at all possible, is try to separate your business from your personal side. Keep those things as distant as possible. Keep them completely separate, and even as going as far as maybe even in your home or an office, having a dedicated space that you want to go, that you know when you're sitting down at this desk in this room, you're doing nothing but focusing on your financial future and on your real estate. Now, I know you're a big proponent of this, Patrick. I've been in your houses, the many houses that you've owned, and you are very protective of a dedicated space for thinking and for business, are you not?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you know, one of the things that I found with members, even before I joined the RAIN team, you know, with the friends who were members, is part of the overwhelm that you can feel when you're first starting into any new venture, but in this case real estate, is when there's lots of clutter, when there's lots of confusion. And for me, creating two distinct, bank accounts, two distinct filing cabinets, a distinct space for real estate versus your personal stuff helps prevent overwhelm and clutter and allows you to focus in, as you said, Russell, specifically on that aspect of real estate that you're stepping into.
Yep. And I know for a fact in our house, we've set up, we have a very large living room in our house, and we're not living room people. So you know what? My business is what's going to create our financial future. We turned our entire living room into a business room space for my wife and I. And when I sit down at my desk, I'm sitting down there. I'm not there to go on Facebook or doing all those kinds of things. I'm focusing 100% on my business. And I even to the fact I have a chair in front of the fireplace that I do nothing but think in.
Yes.
And scratch the dog every once in a while.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. A thinking chair is most important.
I got that lesson from you, actually, Patrick.
I totally have a thinking chair, man. That's perfect space for that. You need that.
Absolutely. Because how are you going to grow your business? You actually have to physically take the time to make an appointment with yourself to sit down and think about how you are going to grow your business.
Absolutely. If you don't book the time to do it, and as one of the things that I do on a regular basis, is a habit of mine, is I park it for half an hour, and it isn't a meditation in this case. It's none of that. It's to just take 30 minutes to kick back and think. And I have a notepad that I don't write well in that 30-minute period, but what I do at the end of that period is I sit up and make all of the notes in the clarity that I gain in that 30 minutes. It's a very powerful tool. Few people know of it. It takes some practice to create a habit around it, but it's a very, very powerful tool.
Yeah, and sometimes in the silence of thinking is when the best aha moments appear.
100%.
Now, the next tip I'm going to share with you is something that I wish I had learned a little bit a while ago, but it's something I've just learned recently, and that's potentially setting up you can rent yourself a mailbox somewhere off-site, have a dedicated address. For example, with all my properties, all the titles have a mailbox addressed on them. I don't have my personal address on all my titles because I don't want tenants doing a title search potentially and finding me, and I want a consistent spot. For example, in the 10 years that since I've been investing, I have moved 3 times in 10 years. And you know how much pain and hassle it is to change titles of properties that have wrong addresses, and having a current address on all of those things is critical, because if they, you know, if your lawyer needs to find you or any of those kinds of stuff, there's always a dedicated mailbox that you have an address for. Another tip to set up is maybe a dedicated phone number. You can get phone numbers really cheap now. Even we talked about today in one of our managers meeting, even there's a Skype number. For $30 a year, you can get a Skype number for and have unlimited calls North America, but that Skype number is a dedicated number for your business. The key thing is when people phone that, your voicemail is very professional, and it's don't mix the personal. Like, don't have, you know, the kids on the voicemail box, dogs barking in the background. It's all professional. Now, here's one of the tips that you always share with us, Patrick, is having a dedicated business credit card. Why is it key that we have a dedicated credit card just for business?
Well, you know, number one, it's a way of improving the accuracy of your bookkeeping. And number one, it's a methodology for bookkeeping. And especially early on, if you're not going to have a bookkeeper, it's just a way so that there isn't confusion. It's efficient. And most people, once again, it's a generalization, but most people have a credit card kicking around that they maybe don't use, or it gets used randomly. And my suggestion and recommendation is that you take that credit card, and that credit card gets used only for business-related expenditures. And that way, there is no confusion. If there happens to be a Costco charge on the card, you're only saying, oh, yeah, what did I spend at Costco for what property? Not, is that groceries or was that for one of the kids? There is no question about it. It's a business expense. You just maybe have to delve into what exactly the expense was.
Now, you've told me very early on that you have a wonderful little system you have with your bookkeeper on. When your statement comes in, you just literally, you get it, and then you write a little bit of information on it, just fax it off to her, or it goes directly now to your bookkeeper, doesn't it?
Yeah, to be honest with you, you know, my bookkeeper, and you know, I have to qualify it. I mean, my bookkeeper has access to my credit card, my business credit card account, and my bank accounts for my business. But, you know, she's been with me 10 years, and we just have that relationship. Long story short is she has access to my statements. I fire off a little Excel with an Excel of a spreadsheet of an explanation for each of the expenditures on the credit card. Generally takes me 10 minutes, and then she does what she needs to do at the back end. So, and often I don't even have to send her stuff. There's, you know, she's to a point where she understands what it is, and all she needs to know is what property it goes to.
And after a while, if you get a good rhythm with your bookkeeper, you can get, there'll be reoccurring charges, and guarantee that they will know exactly what that goes for.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, she figures out stuff sometimes before I do when I look at it. So her and I have that relationship. I don't spend a lot of time, you know, there's a, Stephanie and I have a particular portfolio that is 100% ours that, you know, she, we're the only ones involved in it, and she literally just works through it every month and, you know, occasionally asks me a question, but, yeah, she has it figured out.
Yeah, and it's just a brilliant way of just simplifying things. At the end of the day, we're trying to buy back a little bit of our time. Now, next thing to get as real estate professionals is you want to have a business card of some sort, something that separates yourself. Maybe you have a profession. Keep that separate from your real estate profession. Advertise. It's also a good advertising tool. It's a good way when you're networking with people. You can exchange cards, but more importantly, you make that connection. Another thing here, I highly recommend everybody, if you don't already have a blog or a WordPress site or a website, you should really think hard about getting that now. And at least as a first step, if you think, well, I have nothing I have to put up on a website, at least register a domain name. And the domain name you can have, at least register your own personal name. That could be as a good start in case you want to brand yourself down the road. And also an email address. When you're sending something off, it gives more credibility if you're sending a note from, you know, property@russellwescott.com as opposed to property@hotmail.com. It just gives you another level of professionalism with that.
Patrick, sorry to interrupt, but I just don't want to skip over a point, and that is, everybody should own their own name domain. You know, if, you know, russellwescott.com, patrickfrancy.com, .ca, .net, you need to own your name. In this day and age, there is, you know, whether you think you have plans for it or not, at the end of the day, you need to own your name. It's so inexpensive, but you absolutely have to have your domain of your name and own it.
Yep. Nothing worse than come down the road when you're ready to fire up and you have something you wanted to say and somebody owns your domain name.
Oh, I could tell you stories, but I won't. But it's not fun.
Yeah. Now the next one here is I would highly recommend a business computer, something separate from the computer that the kids are on at home, something separate from your work computer. I remember when I was I worked for Dairyland Foods, Saputo Foods, before I made the transition over to Rain, I had some of my real estate business on the work computer there, and it just did not work, and I felt like I was doing something dishonest by using that computer. So I had to make the cut, and I bought my own computer, and I've had my own computer ever since. You know, worst case scenario is if you have a computer at home and you don't want to buy another one, set up a new user profile that when you're logging in on that user profile has nothing but your business information on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much to say to that other than that's just really, really great advice, Russell. Yeah.
Now, what I also recommend here is, as well, and this is advice I got on early, was having multiple bank accounts, based upon how you set your business up. For example, I invest with joint venture partners with other people's money. I also have a portfolio of my own properties. I have a business operating account, which is one account. I have another account, which is my properties account, my own personal properties. And then each joint venture partnership has its own separate bank account. So the reason for this is that when a transaction goes against property 12345 Avenue, and that's with joint venture Joe, if a transaction goes against that, it just comes out of that one account, And I can easily, at the end of the month, look at the money that came in with the rents and the money that went out, and I can pull a cash flow statement from that bank account very, very quickly without having to do any spreadsheet, without having to do any QuickBooks or anything. I know in an instant at the end of the month where my cash flow position was on that property. I have one account per joint venture, and then I lump all the properties I have with that joint venture partner into that account that I have with that joint venture partner. It just simplifies things. It keeps the cash reserves separate from all your other joint venture partnerships. If you're raising capital and you want to get into trouble, start mixing funds between different joint venture partnerships, and you'll see how fast things go underwater with that. So you have a very similar system too, don't you, Patrick?
Yeah, and Russell, that's, you know, we've both learned our lessons, and we've seen many RAIN members learn their lessons over the years. And the reality of it is, this is like credit cards. There's a couple things here. You know, bank accounts are like the credit cards that you have. If you keep it separate, it is much easier to track. It is much easier to monitor the activity. Watch for mistakes, because mistakes get made, whether it be a tenant not depositing the right amount, or your property manager, or whatever could be happening. You know, you're able to see those errors. I think something else that has to be kept clearly in mind here, and we never touched on it, the great thing about separate business credit cards and keeping your bank account separate from everything else is, it is, first and foremost, it's a really easy way to manage your bookkeeping and manage the costs of your bookkeeping. It's a really efficient way, an accurate way of monitoring mistakes and tracking the costs against a specific property and or portfolio. Maybe you have four or five properties in a portfolio. And as importantly, everybody has to understand one thing, and that is, if there's ever a time where CRA, Canada Revenue Agency, questions what you've got going on, just keep in mind one thing. The onus is on you to prove to them that what you're doing is the way you've laid it out. You want to make that process as easy as possible, and create an audit trail that makes that you can substantiate the claims that you make and the way you submit for taxes or whatever your scenario is. By keeping that bank account clean, those credit cards clean, those expenses, it just flows easy. You have an audit trail. And to Russell's point, if you're dealing with a joint venture partner, you want to be able to show him a bank statement, all of the activity that's gone on in that bank statement now relates to that joint venture. You're not trying to go through a bank statement saying, okay, well, these three transactions don't apply to you. Those are another joint venture. You start to see where it's a big energy leak, it's confusing, then you have to substantiate that. It just gets more complicated than is necessary, given what technology provides for us and what the banks provide for us in our ability to differentiate.
Yeah, and one of the things that I do on a weekly basis is I will monitor my bank accounts on a weekly basis, because someone once told me, what you want to improve, you must measure. And how are you going to improve your bank account position is you keep measuring it, and you have to keep analyzing it. Literally every Friday, I will go into all my bank accounts, and even though nothing may have gone in and out, it just gives me that habit of being financially prudent. And as you said once, Patrick, if you want to have more money to manage, start managing money better.
That's right. Yep. That's just the truth.
So some fantastic information there. Now I'm going to just change gears a little bit, and I'm going to talk a little bit about paper. Now, in this day and age of going paperless and scanners and that, you know, we'd like to 100% remove paper from our life. But the fact of the matter is, when you're investing in real estate, you will get lots of paper. Lots of paper will come your way. And if you have an inbox on your desk, that inbox gets filled up very, very quickly. So you really need to have a quick, simple method to handling that paper. Now, I'm going to just go through very quickly through the four file folder system that we recommend at RAIN. But if you wanted all the details on how to manage that paper tiger, if you will, in the Landlord Secrets Program, there's an entire handout on there about winning the paper war. Or if you don't have that, you go onto My Rain Space, you can search out Rain Power, a paperwork system, and that'll be out a fantastic system for you. But really, all you do need for this is highly recommend, as a real estate investor, you will need a legal-sized file cabinet, four-drawer large file cabinet, four different file folders, tabs, organizing tabs, and also labels. Now, even if you don't even have a property yet, think about the intention that you have, that you're setting out to the universe, that you're buying an empty file cabinet and you're placing it there, and you are expecting to have that file cabinet full of paper because you bought more properties. One of the things that I actually, and it sounds strange, is I measure my business progress by how many file cabinets I've filled up with the amount of properties. Because each month, you get rents coming in, you get statements, and the thicker the file folder means the more months you've owned the property, and the longer you own the property, the more mortgage gets paid down. The more mortgage paid down, the greater return you get on your money. So, Patrick, do you know any successful real estate investors that do not own a file cabinet?
No, I've heard stories of some that just own a shredding machine, but they're not Rain members, so no, I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah.
No, you're going to have a filing cabinet.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk about very quickly about the four file folder system. Now, a lot of this has to do with if you are potentially self-managing, or even if you have a property management company running this. I have all my properties are run by a property management company. I still have all these file folders set up because I need to know the information. I get my property manager to copy me on all the leases, all the move-in inspections. Because if there ever come a time when your property manager, if they, heaven forbid, went out of business, or you had to transition, or something completely went off the rail and you needed to change midstream, whose responsibility is it? It's you as the property owner that you must have the records for all your properties. So the red file folder is all your tenant information. That's where you put your leases, your move-in inspection, all the rental information. You also put in the tenant confirmation form. Anytime you send a notice to your tenant, whether you or your property manager, if they send a notice to the tenant, you keep that in the red file folder, because if there ever comes a time when you maybe have to, you know, evict the tenant and you have to build your case of why you're evicting your tenant, you just go to your red file folder, you take all the pieces of paper and all the notices, you scan them all up, and you've got your case of why eviction is necessary, or why you're following the letter of the law to evict somebody. Plus also all the pictures of your move in and move out pictures. The yellow property folder is all your miscellaneous, copies of your manual, your welcome manual for people, the warranties on all your appliances, all the information, your inspections, the list of all the contacts, who's your handyman, who's the people that they have to contact in, on the yellow file folder. The next one is the blue file folder, and that's your legal documents. That's where you have your offer to purchase, all your due diligence on the property that you've done, your real property report. A lot of this one is permanent information, and it'll fill up very quickly upon the purchase, and you'll get all that documentation back from your lawyer, stuff it all in the blue file folder, and you may only need it again when you sell the property. You know, if you have a joint venture partner, that's where I put my joint venture agreement in there. The green one is for receipts. If you have any monthly receipts that maybe don't go onto a business credit card, keep them in the green one. That's where you're going to be revolving through that fairly quickly. You just would pull that green one out, hand it off to a bookkeeper, or do it yourself, which we will talk a little bit about bookkeeping here in a second. I highly recommend setting up pre-authorized payments wherever possible. The beautiful thing about pre-authorized payments is you can, let's say I own one townhouse, and on that townhouse, my property manager collects the rent, pays off their fee, pays off some of my expenses, and deposits it into that account. My mortgage comes out of that account, my condo fees come out of that account, my property tax, and maybe if there was utilities, that all came out of that account. If you really think about it, at the end of the month, I didn't have to write any checks. I had to do nothing. All my income came in and all my expenses went out. And in one bank statement, I have an entire month of books completed. So do you have all your properties pre-authorized payments where possible, Patrick?
I have all pre-authorized payments. Between pre-authorized payments and tenant pay, which I've become a bit of a fan of, I don't accept any checks or cash anymore in my portfolio. On the larger portfolio that I share with Jared, we have some stuff in place to handle those kinds of things, but everything's pre-authorized and tenant pay now.
Yeah, absolutely. The more things you can set on autopilot, the more you can free yourself up for potentially raising more capital, finding more deals, analyzing more properties, and maybe getting some sleep at night too.
Well, absolutely. And I just want to check in here a little bit, Russell, in that, you know, we don't, you know, I don't know who's on the call today, of course. Some of the members that are on the call are going to have a small portfolio or no portfolio or maybe a larger portfolio. But at the end of the day, here's the thing that we are considering in terms of getting started. And that is that you are planning for where you're putting the system in place. You're building the foundation for where you're going, not for where you are today. And that is one of those things that I wish I would have known in some regards much sooner. I think I would have built my foundation a little sooner and been more proactive instead of reactive. Nothing is worse than having to figure out, you know, 2 years worth of paper or go back on a property. And I'm sure, Russell, you could tell the same story. I know many RAIN members can tell the same story. When I started investing, my goal was 17 properties. And it really didn't go beyond that. As I sit here today talking to this group, I would have never thought that I would have had this portfolio. But the reality of it is that as you get into it, you start to see, I don't want to say that it's easy, but you want to see how doable it is to build the portfolio. So the guidance that I would give members on this call and getting started is to plan for the future. And although your paperwork may only look like one offer or one property, and you'll have this lonely old file swinging in the filing cabinet drawer, you know, as Russell said, the next thing you know, you've got a number of filing cabinet with drawers full of paperwork and titles and lease agreements or whatever that is for you and bank statements, et cetera.
Yeah. And I can tell you with crystal clear clarity, nothing impresses a person who wants to invest money in you than being organized and having your professional systems in place. You want to know the fastest way that joint venture partnerships fail is when a real estate expert does not get the books to their investment partner in time for their taxes. I hear this all the time. If, you know, it comes back as the first crack, if you will, of a bigger problem is that the books aren't done in a timely manner and an accurate manner, and your partner has to ask you for their year-end statements. That is the fastest way to failure in raising capital.
Yeah, and you know something, Russell, is those are good. That's a really great point, because you can't minimize the fact that if somebody gives you 50 grand or 100 grand, that's a lot of money. And it makes people a little nervous when you don't really, when it looks like or appears like you don't really have a clear handle on what's going on with that investment. And so it does make joint venture partners nervous, and it also is what causes some of the challenges in a joint venture.
Yep.
It makes people nervous.
Yeah, and there's nothing, you know, if you're organized and you have this all to down pat and you got your systems in place, I've used it as a closing tool. I bring joint venture partners over to my space in my home, and I walk them through, here's the system I have in place, and here's all the paperwork, here's how it flows. My partners don't need to know all the details I do, but they need to have the confidence that I'm taking care of the details, and that's what I show them when doing that.
Well, and being that way, because as you and I both know, when you get a joint venture partner and he's impressed, it's all of a sudden, yeah, it's not so surprising how they find a little bit more money to invest, or they know somebody who knows somebody, and the next thing you know, other opportunities get created because you present yourself as a professional and show that you have the ability to manage their money respectfully and cautiously, and that just generates more business for you, more opportunities.
All day long. Now, I'm going to share two last, what I maybe would call them, advanced time-saving tips, and these are things that I've just learned recently that I wish I knew back when. I also have, on top of the red, green, blue, yellow four file folder system, I have what I call the two white file folder system. And that's for, I have an action file folder, and I also have an FYI, for your information file folder. So for example, when mail comes to the house, and when you get investing in real estate, you will get lots of mail coming to your house, or you will get online statements that you potentially will print. It's always good to have a source document. My wife or I, in this case, would take the document, quickly scan it. Is this an immediate action? If it is, it goes in my action file folder, and that's the first thing that I have to take care of is the action file folder before I ever get to the FYI file folder. Just another way to make sure that you're on top of the business and doing the most priority, the highest priority first. Do you keep some kind of system like this, Patrick?
Yeah, with all that I have going on, I have to, and I'm fortunate too, is that there's lots of people that kind of manage those details for me. But at the end of the day, it is always about systematizing what you have going on so that it doesn't fall through the cracks and that you get things done, because the details, you know, are what you can get buried in. That's where the overwhelm lies. And as I work with business owners and RAIN members over the years, the overwhelm often comes from a couple of things. One is disorganization. So what you're describing, Russell, is a methodology for putting things in order so that your brain can process them and that they don't fall through the cracks. And that really, really helps to prevent the overwhelm that can catch up to you.
Yeah, and one of the things for me, what it just does is, if I know I have a crazy week, I know I have to get through my action file folder. I have to take care of that. And the FYI file folder, I set it aside till I got a rainy day, and then I'll just plow through it in 1, 2, 3, 4 hour time. But it's when there's a large stack of paper that I know that I have to go through, it just kind of shuts me down. I really don't want to do anything at that time. So.
Well, yeah, exactly. There's enough to do. You don't need to create make work projects, so keep things in order.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, for some of you that are out there that you love digitizing things and going paperless, I highly recommend, if you want to go paperless, go that route as much as possible. Invest in a good scanner. On our desk at home, we have a Fujitsu ScanSnap Pro scanner that you can put in 250 pages in that sucker, and it'll scan through that in less than 2 minutes. We scan as many documents as we have. We have a large 2-gig hard drive on my wife's computer, and we store everything by property. And you know what? I have my file folders at home, electronic file folders, set up in the red, green, blue, and yellow file folder system the exact same way as the paper copy would do that. So recommend, if you wanted to go wireless, invest in a good, fast, efficient scanner. Will help you as well. So Patrick, I got a couple miscellaneous questions before we open it up to the callers, and I know there's lots of questions coming online right now, and we'll open that up in a second, but I just want to get your perspective on a couple things. We've talked about bookkeeping, and we've talked about that before. We get lots of people asking the question, you know, should I get QuickBooks? Should I get Simply Accounting? Should I do it in an Excel spreadsheet? And I know you have a very clear and almost blunt perspective on bookkeeping. Can you share that with us?
I'm always a little bit nervous about sharing it, but I will. You know, at the end of the day, when people ask me that question, Russell, you know, my answer to them is, you know, when they ask me, should I use QuickBooks or Simply Accounting, I always ask them, well, you know, when you grow up, do you want to be a bookkeeper? And, you know, the answer is generally no. And so my question to them is, or my response to them is, your job is not to learn how to be a bookkeeper. And there is, you know, Simply Accounting and QuickBooks is not an answer to your accounting or bookkeeping problems, because there takes a level of expertise to set those programs up. The learning curve is quite large, and it is not, in my world, is not the best way to, or the best place to spend your time. You can hire a bookkeeper anywhere from about $25 to $40. They're trained. They will set your books up correctly the first time, and there's, I can tell you several horror stories about people who set their books up to begin with on their own because they didn't feel they could justify the expense of a bookkeeper. And that was their lesson. And, you know, years later, when they finally hired a bookkeeper and their bookkeeper and accountant had to go in to fix all of the mistakes that they made in initially setting up their QuickBooks program and their or their Simply Accounting, they went, you know, biggest mistake I ever made.
Yeah.
When you can, when you're doing books, because you can hire a bookkeeper for $25 or $40 an hour, they're very experienced at it. What will take you 6 or 7 hours to do, they'll literally do in an hour or an hour and a half because they're trained at it. They know what they're doing. When you choose to do your own books, you're then paying yourself $25 to $40 an hour, number one. Number two, most of the investors in RAIN are not full-time investors. They have jobs and they have families. And so where do you really want to spend your time? First and foremost, what time you have, you want to be able to spend it finding real estate, good deals, and buying real estate because that's where you make your money.
Yeah. And taking your wife to New York.
And taking your wife to New York occasionally because she wants to see you, or perhaps taking the kids to the lake.
Yeah. Yeah.
My point is it's just not a good use of your time. So I get a little bit passionate about it because, you know, it's one of those lessons that I learned very, very early on, and I see those lessons being learned by RAIN members all of the time. So I guess I do. You're right, Russell. I do get a little bit direct about it, and I try and do that respectfully, but that is just the truth.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you're not minimizing bookkeeping. Our bookkeepers in our independent businesses are probably some of our most valuable team members.
Oh, as a matter of fact, what I'm suggesting is that you hire a bookkeeper because they are professionals. They are such a necessary part. And like I said earlier, here's the thing is that you'd have to do the math on it, and I know what I pay my bookkeeper, but you can actually, as part of your assessment or your analysis of your property, add $20 a door for bookkeeping or $25 a door for bookkeeping as part of it and say, well, that's a cost against that property. There's ways to do it. My point is that absolutely hire a bookkeeper. I would do that right out of the gate because they're setting up the foundation for your investment portfolio correctly, and that's the way I would do it.
Absolutely. Now, another question I want to get your perspective on, Patrick. We hear a lot of people, they're just getting started, and they're a little bit maybe confused about should I buy personally or should I invest with a corporation or when is the time to switch or how should I structure my business? And sometimes it almost shuts people down. So what's your perspective on someone who's maybe just getting started in business structure-wise?
You know, the easy answer is go buy the property in your own name and be done with it. You know, don't make the mistake of setting up a corporation, and if you do, make sure you get it set up with a lawyer that knows what he's talking about. That would not be my normal answer. My normal answer to people that ask is think long term, sit down, number one, with an accountant right out of the gate and a lawyer, and because if your commitment is to really engage in the world of real estate investing. You know, if you're going to buy, let's say you're going to buy 15 or 20 properties or 10, get that advice out of the gate, and your accountant and your lawyer will guide you to making the decision that is going to best serve you based on your plan or your strategy that you have. And other than that, I have properties in my own name, lots of them, and I also have properties in my corporate name, lots of them. And we've done that for different reasons, and we did that under the guidance of both our accountant and our lawyer.
Yep, and I know you probably can only speak for your own personal standpoint.
Totally.
But when would a good time be to hold properties in a corporation? What would be a good scenario in that case?
Well, if you're trying to protect some assets, you know, I have other businesses, I have other corporations, so that's one of the reasons that I set it up. But I don't think there is an answer to that question. Everybody's scenario is different, and there are all sorts of ways and reasons to do certain things. And even the type of corporation that you set up matters. And so that's such a big question. We get asked it all the time, and my answer always will remain the same, is that it's not something that I can guide you in. I can give you my scenario. Russell, you know what your scenario is.
Yep.
And we're totally different.
Absolutely.
Or not totally, but we're different in many aspects. I have operating companies. I have two other operating companies aside from Rain. So my scenario is different. And each of us have to look at what we've got going on and say, you know, something, this is what my lawyer and my accountant are suggesting.
Yeah, and usually what I tell people is, and this is the simple Cole's Notes version, is if you talk to a mortgage broker, talk to a lawyer, and talk to an accountant, between those three people, you can get a good understanding of what your situation is, and they can give you good advice. If you still don't know or you don't have a specific reason to invest in a corporation, invest personally, because after the fact, you can always transfer properties to a corporation after the facts and fact and use exchanges and different things like that and transfer it tax-free. So that's usually what I tell people from there. So that is the end of the official component of the questions and in the presentation. So that was fantastic, Patrick. I know Madison has been compiling some questions online. So maybe if you can give us a few questions, Madison, we'll try our best to answer it.
All right, guys, just to answer one quick question that came in here from Susan from Pickering. She was just looking to find out where she could find the information on how to put together the filing system on the website. And what I did is there's a post you'll see now just below the slideshow, and there's a link there that you can go right there for the Power of Paperwork presentation. So that's right below for Susan and anybody else that was looking to check that presentation out.
Hey, Madison, instant implementation. Love it.
Power of technology. So first question here is coming from Brenda in Orillia, and she says, we're in our late 50s, and we've purchased 4 doors this year. What would be a good 10-year strategy for those who are dependent on an income in 5 years?
Well, do you want to go ahead there, Patrick?
You know, I think that, you know, without knowing what the properties are, et cetera, you know, on the surface anyways, in a 5-year strategy, depending on where you bought, what kind of appreciation you might have. There's a couple of different ways to do it. Ultimately, for a long-term income stream, at some point you need to create cash flow, which may mean buying down some of the mortgages or a mortgage or two. Might mean refinancing some properties and using that refinance to put on other properties to increase cash flow, because it's about cash flow at that point. A 5-year strategy is, when you look at a 10-year window, of course, you're buying down a lot of the mortgage in a 10-year period. Ultimately, to create income, it's about increasing rents and bringing the mortgage down. So I don't know if that answers the question, but on the surface, that's how I would approach it.
One of the first things I would recommend, I believe it's Brenda, and I would recommend an exercise that I went through very early on that was very helpful for me, which Peter Kinch wrote in his 5-year plan book that you can get at any Amazon or Chapters. It was a very good exercise in there to determine what kind of income you're going to need when you want to potentially start moving away from an earned income. How do you potentially lower your expenses? You need to create cash flow. 5 years to live off of a property portfolio can be done, but it might be tight. So it might not be long enough. And what I would also end off with this question would be a very big congratulations of the 4 properties that you've purchased so far. That's a fantastic accomplishment in a short period of time. You might need to look at in about 4 to 5 years of how you can start divesting 1 or 2 properties and maybe own a few properties free and clear. If you want good cash flow, properties that have mortgages on it typically don't cash flow as well as properties that are free and clear. No, is that not an obvious statement?
Yeah, that math works exactly. But you know, you're right. 4 properties is a great accomplishment. So congratulations, Brenda, on that. And that's always what it's going to boil down to, is that to create the cash flow. I think your 5-year window might be a little optimistic, but once again, it's going to be about buying mortgages down. when you look at a 10-year window, it gets much more realistic and achievable.
Excellent. Anything else, Madison?
Yeah, absolutely. Just before we jump to the next submitted question, for anybody that's on the phone line, if you'd like to ask a question live on the line, just press *2 on your phone, and we'll be able to know that that you're waiting in line, and we can get your question answered. But the next one here comes from O'Dane in Toronto, and he says, for example, if you know the neighborhood that you want to invest in, what is the first thing that you would do? Do you start inputting figures into your property analyzer form, or do you start looking for tenants or clients? How do you really get started?
Yeah, I can jump in there, Patrick. One of the first things I would recommend you do is take a look back at the acre system that you would have received when you joined or attended live. The property ladder is a fantastic place of showing what steps to do first. So let's say you've done your analysis on the economics and you found a region that makes sense economically. Then you want to potentially, you've now become a geographic specialist. You maybe want to first then take a look at properties in the area, what they're selling for, get a good realtor on your team to help you with the property search, analyze what the rents are in the area, and then do that cash flow zone would be one of the first things that I would do. Before ever placing an ad or trying to find a tenant, I need to know that the property will fit the cash flow zone. And then once it fits the cash flow zone, I will run a quick analysis on the property, which we learned in our last call 2 weeks ago. Then if the numbers make sense from there, then I will start going a little bit further and finding out the rentability, those kind of things. For example, in my neighborhood where I personally live, there's no way properties are going to work there because the prices are just way too high for what you can get for rents. So I know I love it and I love the living in the area, but properties will not make sense there. It has to make financial sense first, then you start looking for potential renters and profiles from there.
I think one of the points that you make up, that you point out there as well, Russell, is tenant profile is so important. So if you're looking at a particular neighborhood, a couple of things is make sure you're going into that neighborhood at, two or three different times of the day to get a feel for what's the traffic through the neighborhood, who your tenant profile is. If there's a grocery store, a Safeway, Save-On, kind of go through a walk through the store and just see what kind of people are shopping there. I always use the illustration of a particular area in Edmonton that I went into the Safeway and it's tons of senior citizens in there. So to the point where even the cashiers at the checkouts are mature. They're 50 plus, and that's because they have the patience to deal with a number of the senior citizens. It was just such a stark example of how important it is to look at tenant profile number one and how impactful and how effective it is to just kind of spend a little bit of time in that neighborhood without looking like a stalker, but to get in there and see what your tenant profile is and what makes it up. So it's important you do that and understand the traffic in that area, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that was a wonderful tip by Brent Davies.
Brent Davies.
Who is a longtime property manager. Fantastic tip from there. So yeah. Great question.
Got another question here coming from Richard in Cumberland, and he's gone into some fairly close details just regarding the personalized binder, the sophisticated investor binder. And so I'd like to first congratulate Richard for diving into that much detail. But from Russell and Patrick, can you guys maybe just give a little more insight into how he can get started with that binder and what are the most important points to put together for that piece of information?
Yeah, that's one of the presentations I do at the meeting at the Acre program, which you should see the changes that are upcoming for the upcoming Acres. It's going to be incredible. But to boil it right down to, I broke it into what I call the essential documents versus the backup documentation. What you need to show to a lender is you need to show them your creditworthiness, that you are able to pay back a mortgage if you get a mortgage. You need to show them where the down payment and where the capital are coming from. So who's going to pay for it, who's going to debt service it, and who is going to come up with the capital? Those are the two most important things. Now, if you're having, Richard, I believe it is, if you're having some technical challenges of filling out line by line item, what I would recommend you do is contact the RAIN office and book an appointment with Ray, and he can walk you through line by line if you just need a little bit of help filling it out. But at the end of the day, what you need to do is show the bank of who's going to pay for the mortgage and that you're worthy of getting the credit, and also where the capital is coming from to purchase the property.
And in addition to that, you know, one of the because you, you know, more and more we're having to deal back with, you know, directly with banks, a cover letter talking about who you are, what your intention is, what your history is a great way, because a banker just doesn't know you, and it's ultimately it's about relationship. I had a coaching call with a RAIN member today who has actually a very large portfolio, and she is now dealing one-on-one with the banks, and relationship is so key in that, and you have to respect the fact that they don't know you. So when you go in there and you give a nice cover letter about what your intention is around real estate, what your perhaps what your experience is in business or in your career, it's all helpful in that banker getting to know you. And it's such an important part about getting a bank to say yes, is knowing that you are capable and you are worthy of paying, you have the ability to repay that mortgage.
Fantastic insights. Any more? I think there's some fantastic questions coming in online, Matty.
There's another one here, Russell, from Anthony in Toronto, and this kind of goes back to the banking tips you guys were chatting about earlier, but he just simply asked, what type of accounts, namely bank accounts, do you set up for each of the joint ventures you create? He says, checking, business, how might you structure these as your portfolio grows?
Yeah, it's how I personally do it is, and you know, you can structure it any way you want, is I have a good relationship with an RBC rep who set me up with a very good banking account, which I run my own personal banking and operations through is RBC, and all my other joint ventures, they're all owned personally. I have 23 accounts set up through President's Choice Financial, which is a online bank account which I can, you know, to make any deposits if need be to any CIBC bank branch, and they're all online, all the statements, everything's online, and because the properties are owned personally, they're just checking accounts, no cost, free checks, no frills, no nothing, and they're just all bank accounts like that. And across the country, you can get any kind of things. I know Coast Capital Savings has something out here in Western Canada, ING Direct, before they got bought out by Scotia. Many banks will offer that you can have numerous different accounts there, but I would find just a simple service provider like President's Choice Financial, which you can get set up in any Western Canada at superstores or in Eastern Canada at any Loblaws account, or even just pcfinancial.ca.
Yeah, that's it. It's keep it simple. Just straightforward business account, or not business account, checking account, and just keep it very, very simple. You know, we don't even, our accounts, we only, you know, because with a particular bank that we deal with, we only refer to them as the last two digits, you know, 02, 03, 04. I mean, so when I'm talking with my accountant, we're talking about an 02 account. It's all under one account number, but then there's sub-accounts that are separate bank accounts.
Yeah, and another key thing that you couple things that I've learned along the way too, when you have that many bank accounts, eventually, see, we're preparing for the future, is use the nickname feature on the online accounts. So when you're going in there, there could be literally just a series of numbers. Some of them have what you can use a nickname, and you could just call it Birchwood Property or
totally.
Bannerman Village, and so you know what account goes with what property.
Simple, simple, simple. Keep it simple.
My wife figured all these things out for me, so she just tells me where to go.
Yeah. Okay, we won't touch that one, Russell.
Anything? I know there's a couple more, Madison. So why don't we take a couple more questions, and then we can sign off for tonight.
Excellent. Adam from Calgary is coming in with a question here. Says, when working with a realtor, is it a good idea to sign a buyer's brokerage agreement as well as a brokerage agreement? I think he's had this question once before, perhaps.
I'm just trying to think if I've ever signed a buyer's brokerage agreements. I've never. Now, I don't know if there's anything wrong with signing one. The question that I would have with the, I'd have a very clear, concise conversation with the realtor, is essentially what they're trying to do is they're trying to lock you in that you want to buy them and you're going to use their services. Okay. I have a conversation with my realtor and say, are you concerned if I don't sign this that I'm not going to fulfill on a purchase that you bring me? Is that your concern? And then you have that conversation with them. I don't know. It's a tough question to, what would your response be if someone asked you to sign that, Patrick?
I personally don't understand the full context of it. So, on the very surface of it, I would not sign it. But without more information, it's hard to comment. My only, I guess I have to look at it and say, is the realtor a RAIN member? Do they really understand what's behind your intention as an investor? Do they understand what it is you're looking for? It's really up to them to deliver. I think what's happening in the world of realtors, it's getting to be very, very competitive. And like Russell says, they're trying to get you to be locked into whatever it is that they've got going on. I'd be a little bit cautious about it is how I would present it. There are lots of RAIN member realtors who are very experienced, very savvy, understand exactly what you're looking for, and they are based on performance. So, they're not trying to lock you in. They don't ask for a buyer's agreement. So I would caution that on the surface anyways.
Yeah, I would highly recommend you read it. And really what they're trying to do is trying to confirm you, and they're trying to filter you in to find out you're serious. If you think about it, if you're engaging a good buyer's agent, they're going to go out, if you have an agent like what mine does, mine visits every property for sale in my target area of the properties that I have. He has pictures of them. He has a cash flow analysis of it. And if you were a brand new investor going to that person, he wants to make sure that that you're not going to just, buy it from somebody else after he's done all this work and made all this investment in there. So what he's probably just trying to do, or they are probably just trying to do, is just trying to confirm your intention that you're serious in doing it. So I would highly recommend reading the agreement, and if there's something in there that you don't feel comfortable with or don't agree with, you can change it, you can amend it, and you could put, and if your broker will not work with you unless you sign one, you guess you have to ask the question of pass or play, or put a time limit on it and say it's only good for, don't have it open for 6-9 months, have it open for, 5-6 weeks, and then go from there. So that's what I would recommend.
Yep.
Excellent. I hope that helped you out, Adam. We got one more question here, guys. And this is coming from Tom in Milton, Ontario. And he says, I'm interested in taking big ideas, breaking them down into the numbers, and translating that into an action plan. So with that, would you be able to talk about maybe a little bit about what your personal beliefs was and how many properties it's taken you to achieve that, or how many more you might need to get to finally hit that milestone?
Wow, that's a really big question.
Well, there we should pull up a pipe and a glass of Cavassier and sit by the fire.
That's a big question. I think that there's a years ago when I was I worked with lots of NHL hockey players, and there was I was working with one particular player who had signed a huge contract, and I said to him, that's unbelievable. I said, how the heck much money do you guys really need to make? And he said, he just looked at me and he said, something? I'll just tell you that the more you make, the more you need to make. And it took me a long time to really get to that, what that is all about. And ultimately, there is no end. You have a Belize and you have a picture, and all of a sudden you get there and you wake up one day and you go, okay, well, what's next? Because it's never about that. It's, for me, as much as I love to create wealth and make money, that's the least of my drive in terms of choosing and making decisions to what I'm, why I'm doing what I'm doing. Having said that, You know, if I don't have a specific financial goal in mind and saying, okay, well, if I have X amount of money in my bank, I'm going to shut it down. It's just never really about that for me. There's a place of comfort that I live at, and for me, it's just about lifestyle. And right now, I could say I've achieved all of that. But I also look at it and go, no, it's not enough. There's more I want to achieve. There's more I want to do, and it's not attached to the dollars and cents, although that's an important part of it. It's not the main drive behind it. So I don't know if that's really answering your question, other than the more you make, the more you need to make. And as long as you're loving what you're doing and are inspired to do it, you know, the money is really secondary. That, you know, that's as simple as I can keep it, I think.
Yeah, and what comes to mind when that first came out was a friend, my friend Thomas Beyer once said to me is, you know, man plans and God laughs.
Yeah.
So the one thing I have learned, and from, you know, the focus of this call is on getting started. From getting started to where I am now 12 years into this, is that it takes fewer properties than I thought when I first got started. I originally thought that I needed hundreds, maybe even 150 properties or more to do it. My number has now scaled down, and I've built some of these plans into what I call phases. My first phase goal that I want to accomplish with my real estate, this is real estate separate from my personal, because personally I want to become a wonderful father, a wonderful husband, a wonderful coach, presenter, mentor for people that are looking to change their financial positions in life. But within real estate, my first target is I want to have 60 properties that eventually after 10, 12 years sell off about 40 of them and have the proceeds from those 40 pay off the remaining 20. Then with 20 free and clear properties, that cash flow at $500 a month is $10,000 a month. $10,000 a month is $120,000 a year. With $120,000 a year goalpost is a wonderful place to have a fantastic financial position to build from again. Then after I reach that goal post, I want to take it even bigger and go from there. So,
yeah, and with that kind of money, Russell, you could go to New York at least twice a year.
at least every second year.
4 days.
So it really comes down to it's not a right or wrong answer for everybody. Everybody has different needs and requirements. And I believe the original comment was this person thinks really big. I commend that. Keep the big thinking in play. Don't ever start thinking small, but also you have to think big, but you also have to take care of the small details along the way so you can play big.
Yeah, and you know something, Russell, just further to that, is even to this day, I remember I turned 40. And
that was only last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, at least that. I turned 40, and I was sitting there one day, and Stephanie and I were kind of reading and having a conversation. I had a realization that I had achieved everything I had expected to achieve in my life at 40. And my realization in that moment was two things. Number one was, holy cow, do I ever think small? And secondly, what's next? And, you know, 15 years later, or almost 15 years later, I can still have those same conversations. And when every time, so when you talk about thinking big, I can tell you right now, you're only thinking big based on what you know today. And that's going to expand, and I hope whatever your big thinking is really, really big, because when you get there, you go, holy cow, that was easy. What's next? So, you know, those are really tough questions to have to provide you an answer. All I can tell you is keep thinking bigger, keep moving forward, and it isn't about the money. As much as it is about the money, do what you love to do, have fun along the way, create amazing relationships, and you will create a great deal of wealth just in doing that.
Yeah, and it's interesting on how that ever since Mr. Richard Dolan has come on board, how my own personal self, how my thinking has gotten a lot bigger, and it's amazing on how having just surrounding yourself with other and different people that your thinking can change. And that's one of the beautiful things about RAIN membership, is you start hanging out with RAIN members who think big, who have big goals, big ambitions, and will take you up to new heights from there. So I think that's a wonderful place to leave off with. I see the clock. We're getting close to our allotted time. Patrick, I know how busy you are, and for you to share the last, you know, almost 90 minutes with everyone here is a blessing, and I wanted to thank you on behalf of everybody. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule tonight.
Russell, this is great. I love doing this, and of course, that's what we're here to do, and we talk about thinking big and creating relationships and what's next. I've said this before, and for me, it's just worth repeating. You know, Richard Dolan talks about the relationships, and he shows the relationships that he's created. Here's a guy, you know, Richard Dolan, that comes from a broken family and comes kind of living on the wrong side of the tracks, and next thing you know, he's doing openings for the President of the United States. Russell Westcott, a kid from Saskatchewan, and he sits here today with a really strong real estate portfolio. He's a significant part of the senior management team with the Real Estate Investment Network, supporting others to succeed, having fun doing it, and has a huge amount of success in what you've set out to do, Russell. You know, 10 years ago when I joined RAIN, I never, ever had a Belize or a picture of sitting here today as a CEO of the Real Estate Investment Network, a partner with Don Campbell and Richard Dolan, and supporting other RAIN members to achieve what they want to what they see for themselves as success. And so we all sit here today. I love doing what I'm doing. Russell, I know that you're in the same boat. As you know, being busy doing this kind of stuff is really terrific. And we're here and want to continue to partner with all the RAIN members to support their success. And that's where I would kind of sign off for today, Russell,
yep.
For me.
Absolutely. Fantastic place. So thank you very much. And the last message I wanted to do is I just wanted to say a great big thank you for RAIN Partners for being on the line tonight. It's been a wonderful, wonderful call. I'm going to open the phone lines up here in a second, but I just wanted to thank you and have yourself a wonderful evening. Bye for now.